Hello, my fight fan friends. Support for the Fitz Nation podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. But if you're a UFC fan, I don't have to tell you that. They've been a great partner with the UFC for years, and I'm thrilled they wanted to support the Fitz Nation podcast as well. Manscaped's products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Their performance package is the ultimate in men's hygiene. Join more than 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. You can get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the promo code FITS20. That's at manscaped.com. Use the promo code FITS20, FITZ20. And that'll get you 20% off and free shipping. Now, I mean, just a quick note. We've all kind of brought the razor down there, and you just want to neaten things up a little bit, and you either cut yourself or, you know, you look like you got a bad haircut, if you catch my drift, with bald spots. That does not happen with the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. They sent it to me, and it is a total game changer. You got the Lawnmower 4.0. That's the trimmer. You got the Weed Whacker for those ear and nose hairs. I'm not to the ear hairs yet. I'm at the nose hairs, though. Crop Preserver, Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver, Toner. I mean, they got everything that you need and more. Trust me, you are going to want to get this package. And the great news is, it's a great deal. 20% off, free shipping, promo code FITS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off, free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the promo code FITS20. Unlock your confidence. Always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Now it's time for our episode of Fitz Nation.
Fitz Nation, let's go.
I always had to be mega in the zone, ready to go out there on my shield.
Be in the question and don't look for the answer, because the answer is the end.
Think about who I'm fighting for, fight for something greater.
At the end of the day, you got to believe in yourself.
It's time for the Fitz Nation podcast with your host, Brendan Fitzgerald.
We got Cody Brundage on the show, fresh off a big win, although this is coming out a couple weeks later. You'll be basking in the aftermath a few weeks later, even. Cody, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. Staying busy, you know, no rest for the wicked. So I'm in New York with Dustin and getting ready to celebrate his win now.
All right. We'll see what happens this weekend. Great fight, too. I don't know. I've said this. I don't know why they keep putting him early in the night. It's like you got a ranked light heavyweight, brings it every time. They got to start putting him on some main cards, give him a co-main event or something, you know?
That's what I said. But we were talking about it the other day. They keep putting him on cards with fans. So I asked him, I said, would you rather be like waiting on the card point. Or be on cards that have fans? He said he'd rather have fans. So he's all right with it.
How do you feel about that? A couple of fights. Well, actually, so you fought Maximov in a full arena. That was a whirlwind. We'll get to that experience. But in the Apex a couple of times, how do you think?
I like it. I wish like my wife could come, you know. It'd be cool to have her in the crowd. There's definitely positives from being in the Apex. Like I can hear my coaches, I can hear my opponent's coaches. It's a little more relaxed because it's almost like sparring, obviously, it's a fight. But and then when you have the fans, there's just so many extra things that are going on. Like I remember when I fought Maximov, I'm like hearing the crowd more than I'm even hearing my coaches, and not just like the loudness of the crowd, like individual people in the crowd like yelling at you, which was different and odd. So there's definitely positives and negatives to both.
Jamal Hill just put out a funny Instagram post, a TikTok, and it was just like the things that people say in the crowd, and it was like his voice saying the weirdest shit. Like what? Do you remember like a weird something?
He's killing it on social media.
He's great. He's so funny.
He's awesome. Yeah. You know, I fought on some cards as him as a regional guy because we're both from Michigan.
Michigan guys, right?
And, he's funny, man. He's hilarious.
So, like for you though, well, we'll get into the UFC debut experience a little bit later. You said something interesting there, though. You can hear your coaches in the Apex, and you can hear the other coaches. And I noticed this last week when I was calling fights. It was like somebody's got top position,
along the fence right in front of the opponent's coaches, and they're trying to walk him out of bottom position. And like, I know you don't want to be just known as a wrestler and a grappler. You just knock the crap out of Trayshon Gore. but from a grappler's perspective, because you are kind of decorated in that and top pressure and top position, when you can hear what they're telling their guy on how to get out, how does that affect you? Because we often focus on you hearing your coaches, but not the other people's coaches, maybe.
You know, it's a lot of that. Even in the striking, like if my coach calls out a certain combination, I don't want to do it because I know that my opponent heard it too.
Yeah.
You know? And same thing on the ground. If they're telling me to do a certain thing, I know that's the correct way to get up, but you're hesitant to do it because you know your opponent's hearing everything you're hearing. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to do this technique. He doesn't know what's going on. Like he's ready for it even more so than he would be if he wasn't hearing that. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It's definitely an interesting game. I feel like I'm kind of used to it because in sparring at Factory X, we spar every week and we're in the cage and you can hear what the other guys' coaches are saying and what your coaches are saying. So you kind of get that experience a little bit. But yeah, it's definitely different. It's weird kind of. It makes me more hesitant, I feel like, to go to certain positions or to listen to my coaches right away because I'm like, well, he's expecting it now. I'm not going to do it. You know?
Yeah. You want to figure it out for yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. Or like come back to it. Like if they call out a certain thing that they're seeing, I'm like, okay, hopefully they don't say, I know they want me to do it right now, but hopefully they don't say it again for like 30 seconds. So I'll forget.
Right.
Come
right.
back to it. Yeah.
How do you feel like your UFC experience is going so far?
I think it's been good, man. I feel like I'm so young in the sport. I've only been a pro for a little over 3 years, which isn't really a very long time. And I feel like I'm getting better every fight. I've only been at Factory X for 2 years. So I've only really been training at an elite level place for 2 years. And I feel like I'm growing and getting better and more confident. And, you know, even like, obviously I'm getting better with my fighting skills, but, you know, just dealing with the nerves of a fight week and a high pressure situation, you know, that takes a lot of practice too, just mm-hmm. like anything else. And I feel like I'm getting more comfortable and feeling better going into fights, which has been huge for me. And yeah, I think it's been great, man. I feel like I'm doing a lot of the things that I thought I would be able to do. And that's exciting because, you know, everyone is like, I want to get to the UFC. I want to get to the UFC. But then you get here and you're like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. You have all these doubts, obviously, you know, you're like, I'm finally here. I got to prove it. You know, I've been telling everyone I want this and now I'm here. And if I don't go out and perform, I'm going to look like a phony a little bit. And, you know, I feel like I've been able to figure it out. And especially after that debut, obviously didn't go the way I wanted, but been able to figure it out and string together some pretty impressive wins.
How do you describe what you've done to better deal with the nerves of a big spotlight?
I think it's just reps. I think it's a lot of reps, you know, and the only way you get reps is to fight and deal with those emotions. And instead of fighting the emotions so hard of like, if I don't feel confident right in this second, that means I'm going to lose because only confident people win. And it's not necessarily that. It's like, okay, this is normal. This is how you felt before. This isn't going to affect your performance. My coach calls it making friends with those feelings. And it, like yeah. I said, it takes a lot of reps and work because it's so unnatural. Your body's like, you don't have to do this. This is stupid. You could do so many other things, you
yeah.
know, and you have to convince yourself like, yes, that's all true. Like all those things are true. Trying to fight those feelings, like, it's bad that I feel this way. It's just extra energy. So it's just accepting that like, yeah, this is different. This is crazy and anything can happen in there. And, you know, making peace with that, I feel like has been huge for me to have clarity going into fights and be more level headed.
Yeah. I realized this. I had this thought, I was thinking about it last week. Being nervous is often looked at as a negative thing. And really what it is, if you break it down, is it's your body's signals telling you one of two things, often both, that it's very important to you and that it's still pretty new to you. And so like, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, a new fight, I've dealt with this in my career. Anytime you do something new, you get nervous again. And it's because like for you, probably, you know, new promotion. Anytime you're in a new promotion, I bet there's a level of nerves that was, is that correct? I mean,
yeah, I think anytime, I think also there's so much time in between fights. It's not like other sports where you're playing every 3 nights or
it's true.
You know, you're fighting every 4 months. So like all the feelings that I have before this fight, I'm going to I'm not going to forget them, but they're kind of going to go away. They're going to be in the way back of my mind. And you don't feel them again until like the week of your fight. And you're like, oh, here we are again. How did I deal with this last time? And, you know, that's when things like, I feel like journaling and like kind of keeping notes almost like on a, like a self-study almost on how you're dealing with it and what's been successful for you is important, you know? So, I agree though. Yeah. Anything new is going to obviously cause those. I like what you said. Like, it's definitely because you care about it. If you weren't nervous, that'd probably be a problem, you know?
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. And like, I feel like the nerves keep you sharp. Obviously, you know, I feel like that's important. If you're, I've had fights where I've gone in and I'm not nervous and, you know, I'm not on top of my game because it, I don't know if it didn't mean anything to me, but I just wasn't, I didn't have the nerves. And I feel like the nerves are a benefit because, like I said, I think they keep you sharp. I think they keep you like in tune to what you're doing. Whereas if you're not nervous, you know, you're more liable to kind of be lax, make a mistake, things like that.
Also, if you're nervous, you remember things more vividly. This is all brain chemistry stuff, Cody. I'm glad we're having such an academic conversation. It's all like, I use an example as a wedding. There was no way that Amanda was going to say no to you, but you were probably nervous.
Right.
I didn't expect to be nervous for my wedding. I was just like, what do you mean? We've been together forever. Like, this is, we're as solid as ever can be. And then you're just like, because it's important and it was new.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a great analogy. Cause like you, and like a fight, like you have the nerves of the fight. You don't know what's going to happen. You know, I think the other thing that helps a lot too, is I'm so confident in the work I put in that, it makes it easier to deal with the results. You know, I feel like before, maybe when I wasn't doing everything I could do, the results would really shatter me. Because it wasn't the results, it was the fact that I knew I could have done more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And now I know, like, I'm doing everything I can. So if the results don't work out in my favor, you know, we're in the toughest sport in the world and the biggest organization in the world, and sometimes that's just how it happens, you know. So I think that's helped me a lot, too.
Why weren't you doing everything you could before?
You know, I feel like, I don't know.
When are we talking?
Just like not, maybe I didn't do my diet correctly because my weight cut wasn't that hard.
Right.
And so I was like, I don't have to diet perfect. I'll make the weight. But it's like, well, if you eat right, your fuel will be better. Your training will be better. Or I wasn't sleeping the way I should sleep. But just little things, you know, it wasn't anything like crazy. It wasn't like I wasn't training or going on benders or anything like that. But just like little things that like might seem insignificant. But when you lose a fight, they're the only things that you think about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, I didn't lose the fight because I didn't train hard, but maybe this kid ate better than me, or maybe this kid was, you know, actually getting 8 hours of sleep a night, or maybe this, you know what I mean? Just like little things that, that you can control that are pretty easy to control that I feel like have been beneficial for me.
Opportunity costs are real. People don't often want to, people don't, I tell people, or I don't tell people, I mean, I guess I'm telling them right now, but like the opportunity costs of, you know, good questions and good answers, like from a broadcast perspective, you can have a reasonable interview with somebody. People say, oh, good interview. And it's just like, yeah, but what if this question was better? And then it could have been a news-making interview. And also, just because you're a teacher or a lawyer or an accountant and you're not a pro athlete doesn't mean you can't do your job better if you take care of yourself a little bit better, if you get better sleep, if you eat a little bit better. You know what I mean? Obviously, exactly. You look at athletes like you, it's easy for you to be like, I could have eaten better. It's directly kind of related to your profession.
But like for you, same thing. Like when you're doing the broadcast, like you can watch, you can decide you're going to watch this amount of film on people, or you can be like, well, I've seen his old fights, so I kind of have an idea. And then, you know what I mean? And like either one will probably be good. You're good at your job.
Right.
Either one will be good, but one will be better than the other. And if you do the first, like the one that's less good, you'll think about it like, well, I could have done a better job. Even though everyone else is telling you like, man, it's awesome. You did good.
I mean, I could hold my eyes open with toothpicks and watch film all night, the night before the show. But if I don't get good sleep, I'm going to suck.
Yeah, you know what exactly. I mean? Yeah.
You know, sure. So you got to figure out like what the magic is. All right. Mm-hmm. It says on your bio, you were born in South Carolina. But you're a Michigan guy. What's the growing up story for Cody?
So I grew up in right outside Columbia, South Carolina. Went to college there, wrestled there.
Oh, and so then, you're not a Michigan guy. You're a South Carolina guy.
No, I'm an adopted Michigander. Yeah, I'm a South Carolina boy.
Oh, Nice. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I moved to Michigan to coach college wrestling, and that's where I started MMA. I kind of found a gym and just decided I was going to train or whatnot. And
Well, so how'd you grow up? I like to kind of dwell on things a little bit.
Oh, dude.
You don't seem like a guy from the South to me.
Yeah. Well, my mom's from Vermont. My dad's from New York. So okay. You know,
transplants.
He was stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina.
Okay.
He was in the 82nd Airborne, and then obviously right when I was born, he kind of got out and was now, and then moved to South Carolina with my mom. They divorced when I was real young, but my life was great, man. Growing up, I always joke like if people ever hear my story, they're going to automatically root against me. Cause I had like, my parents worked really, really hard, man. They worked their asses off to make sure that I was always taken care of. My brothers and sisters were always taken care of. We never really went without. And, you know, I was very fortunate and lucky that way. Fighting where I'm from is not like it's so foreign. It's such a crazy idea that someone from the town I'm from would grow up and be a professional fighter, just because that's just not what people would do, you know, right. ever. So, I had a great childhood. My life was like better than most, I would say, you know, like,
were you rich? Were you just?
My parents worked really hard, man. They were well off. They're both physical therapists. They, you know, we went to camps in the summer.
So you were a rich kid?
Yeah, I was a rich
kid. But you don't like to admit that, obviously.
I always say my parents were well off. They took care of us.
Right.
There wasn't anything like. It wasn't like crazy. Like we were.
Well, you didn't have a yacht, but like.
No, but we got a boat.
Oh, you did have a boat. Did you have a beach house?
My grandparents had a beach house that we would go visit. So I was like upper middle class.
Yeah. You seem to shy away from that. It's like it takes away your street cred a little bit in the fight game.
Yeah, which is so silly, right? Like, I don't, you know what? You're right. I'm going to start claiming it. I was well off growing up. You know, my
just be the million dollar man. Like, yeah, just
you're right.
To that.
You're right.
Well, everybody wants to come from, not everybody. The sexy story is come from nothing, earn it yourself, get all the way to the top, and then buy a $1 million watch, right?
Right.
Conor McGregor fairy tale is what a lot of fighters are chasing. And if you don't have the beginning, then you kind of feel like there's not a full puzzle, no matter how successful you are.
That's the truth. I struggled with that for a long time. You know, I struggled with the fact that I came from what many people and myself would consider privilege, and that I just decided basically like this was a hobby that turned into something I was good at, and I wanted to keep doing it. And I struggled. I was like, well, maybe I don't deserve it over people that are doing this because maybe it's their only way out, or this is their rise to from something terrible. And I struggled. That was a hard struggle for me for a long time. Like, how can I fight these guys that have been fighting their whole lives? You know what I mean? For whatever it is, I've never had to face that adversity. And then, as I got a little bit older, you know, obviously adversity found its way into my life, and not that it like made me feel like now I deserve it, but it just made me realize that it doesn't, like, adversity is not going to dictate your success or not.
Right.
If that makes sense.
So like when you're coming up and you're struggling with the fact that you're well off and these other people are fighting to get out, fighting for a better life, did you feel bad? Was it like feeling bad that you might even step on them more? I've already got a good family situation. I've got a good financial situation. This person's fighting to get out, and I'm going to beat him and peg him down. Is that part of it?
Bad. I don't know if I felt bad. I just felt like maybe they were more deserving than I was, if that makes sense. Like,
it's weird. I understand where you're coming from.
Like, maybe, like, you know, I've had everything given to me my whole life, and now I'm going to go take this other thing, and maybe I don't deserve it. But then you kind of realize, like, man, no one really deserves anything. You're going to go, you know, you get what you earn. And, you know, that was a big turning point for me to realize that. But, I don't know if I felt bad. I just felt like maybe not as deserving as some other people.
Did you find the chip, or did you find where things could have been better? Cause for me, and like, same thing, middle-class family, like, right. Grew up, both my parents actually divorced when I was a senior in college, but you know, good life, right? Good life. Played sports, whatever, suburban life. Went to a private 4-year college to major in broadcast journalism, right? There's a lot of people that don't have that. But then I would just be like, yeah, but I'm not connected like these kids from New York City whose dad is a producer at NBC. And what, you know, I'm not like, I was an outsider in some regards. I I had a hard time, harder time getting my career going because of a lack of connections. I felt like
to find my chip, all of that kind of just led to my chip. Like, no one expects me to fight. No one expects me to be successful because of where I come from. Like, the opposite. Almost like you're expected to be a good fighter if you have that story of, like, well, I came from nothing, so this is, I'm fighting for everything I have. It's almost the opposite. Like, well, you've forgiven everything. You're not going to – you can't fight. You can't turn this into your career. You can't be successful and overcoming adversity, because that's what fighting is. It's just overcoming adversity. And, you know, so I feel like that's where I kind of found my chip, where, like, well, I'll show you that I don't have to have this terrible story to, you know, overcome adversity and prove it to myself all the time. And I think that's kind of what drew me to fighting a little bit, is that I hadn't dealt with a ton of adversity. And like I said, I feel like that's what fighting is. And
yeah,
the prove it business. You got to prove to yourself a lot of things every time you're in there. And, you know, I think that's kind of what attracted me to the sport.
How do you explain then having an easier life than others, and then dealing with the adversity and going toward it instead of going back to where it was easier?
Well, you know, early in my career, I would say I'd lost fights because, like, in my amateur career, I lost a couple fights when it got tough, and I would be like, well, whatever, I don't care. I got other options, maybe, you know, would flash through your mind. And now, obviously, you know, I have some adversity in my life, and I realize that the adversity I face in fighting is nothing compared to the adversity that I face in my life. And that fighting is a privilege, and that the adversity you face in there is a privilege, and it's chosen. I choose to do that. Whereas, like, the adversity in real life is not chosen. And that, if I can overcome that, if I can work to, like, be positive through that, and my wife can be positive through that, then fighting, I feel like, is super easy.
Yeah.
You know? But I didn't used to feel like that. Like, fighting used to be the only adversity in my life. And I was like, this is so hard. How can I do this? And, you know, I think it's just a perspective thing. Once I got a little better perspective on what real struggle is, I feel like fighting became a lot more easy.
Right. I know you're talking about your daughter, Kingsley, right? And yeah. I want to get into that for sure, but I like to keep the timeline. So, like, how did you, what it says on your file is that you weren't done with competing, right? You wrestled in college, and then you're like, what now? Mm-hmm. But you were a triple major. Were you going to be a teacher? Were you going to be a
high school teacher? I was going to be a high school teacher and a wrestling coach. And that was going to be the move. That's what we planned on.
Now, why that profession, or why that line of, you know, a career?
Well, I love coaching. I've always loved coaching. I love it now still just as much as I love fighting. And I just feel like you have an opportunity to really make an impact in people's lives when you're teaching or coaching. And I felt like being in a position where I could do that was something I would enjoy doing. I feel like sometimes people are like, you gotta love your job and you gotta love it every day. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I think a job is a job. And, you know, I feel like you should enjoy what you're doing when you're making money and providing for your family, but it's going to be hard. Like, it's not always going to be easy, even if you have the best job in the world, you know what I mean? So, I felt like teaching was a job that I would enjoy and that I would get a reward from in terms of, like, seeing kids be successful and being a part of that. So I was like, yeah, I was all signed up. And plus I wanted to stay active in sports. So coaching, obviously, was like a natural avenue to do that. And
yeah,
I thought that's the perfect job for me.
Where do you think you got that? The attitude of wanting to have a positive impact on other people?
I think growing up, you know, like I said, I was well off and I had a good life growing up, but I had a lot of struggles in terms of, like, just like depression and things like that when I was young, and kind of not fitting in and kind of being an outcast a little bit. And the adults in my life were huge in terms of keeping me positive and making sure that it wasn't overwhelming, because when you're young, everything can be overwhelming pretty easily. I'm still young and I feel that way. So
yeah,
when I was like 15, 16 years old, you know, everything, every little thing can be overwhelming. So the adults that were able to keep me grounded and keep me, you know, focused on the future and realizing, you know, that this too shall pass, I felt like really gave me good direction in my life, and I owed them a lot. So I felt like I could do that for people as well.
Why did, what's the depression from?
Well, I feel like a lot of this is silly, but I wrestled all through high school. I think a lot of it was that I was cutting like 30 pounds every year, You know, weight cutting is obviously not good for you. Because I was cutting so much weight, my grades, I didn't have bad grades, but my grades weren't where they should have been, which created a lot of stress in my home life. With my parents, you know, they didn't really understand, and it was pretty high tension. And so then carrying that to school and kind of being the outcast on my team a little bit, just because, I struggled, like the weight cutting thing was such a big issue. I missed weight. So then my team would be pissed at me. They kind of exclude me from things because of that, which whatever, you know, it's just high school kids doing dumb shit, but it has a huge impact on you.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, in the rearview mirror, it's just high school kids doing dumb shit. When it's your moment, when it's like your world.
Those are your best friends. That's your team. That's your whole world. And when you feel like you're getting excluded from that, and you're failing on multiple fronts, like in your home life, in school, on the mat, those kind of things, it seems super, super, and it is really overwhelming when you're that young.
Yeah, the excluding thing, man, it never goes away. Like the littlest thing will kind of set it off sometimes, and you just be like, "Wait, what's happening?" Like, you know.
Oh yeah, you get triggered. I get triggered super easily. I'm like, "Why didn't that person hit me up to go do that?"
Yeah, for me, the silly thing is, I just go, like, all of my shows are at the Apex, and then when everyone's on the road, right? It's just like, okay, well, these are like the events I'm working, and then full arena, and I'm just like, wait a second. What happened here? I used to be on the road. Like, I used to go out to dinner with people.
Where's my invite?
The pandemic was a big part of it, and like having a baby and all that other stuff. So why did you still need to compete? Can you explain the thing with competing? I talked about this with Chris Curtis, and he was just like, I don't care about the competing. I just want to, I'm having fun. I love fighting. For other people, it's all about the need for competition.
Well, my whole life, I had four brothers and a sister growing up. My sister and two of my brothers are college athletes, so pretty athletic household. We competed in everything growing up, and I think that's part of it. But I also just, I don't know, I'm like probably one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet. And obviously, I love fighting, and because there's other things I could compete at. It's not just the competition.
That's what I mean. You could play golf on the weekends and be
competitive. Yeah, it's not just the competition. I think the biggest thing is the prove it aspect. Like I said, like, it makes life easier when I can go in here and kind of overcome adversity daily, whether it's in practice or whatever. It reinforces that I'm able to do that, which is huge for my life. Because I feel like with that, when I left college, my parents were like, "Well, do CrossFit," or they gave me 100 things to do other than MMA, because obviously no mom wants to see their kid fight. Yeah. So, you know, I tried all those things. It just didn't fill the void. And you know, fighting really has, and I don't know, I can't like put my finger on exactly why that is. I think it's a combination of things, but I think, like I said, the prove it aspect of it, the culture that I have found, especially at Factory X, and the team aspect, all those things I feel like kind of resonated with me and really led to me loving it, obviously, and continuing to do it.
But you mentioned before it was a hobby that kind of turned into something more. Did you ever think you were going to be a pro MMA fighter?
I thought I would take a couple fights, like amateur fights. I didn't really ever think I would make it to the UFC. I've been such a fan of the sport for such a long time. Like, when I wrestled in college, everyone would come to my house for the pay-per-views, and I was running like underground boxing nights.
Oh, you were one of those. You were on the own fight club.
This is sweet. But I feel like I'm super realistic with myself. And I was like, those are the 1% of athletes in the world, and you know, who knows, like, I'm never gonna make it there, but I thought it would be fun to take an amateur fight just to feel like, oh, I did it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was fortunate that when I started fighting, I quickly assembled a group around me that were the right people. You know, my wife very quickly became one of my main coaches, gave me a lot of time and energy. Colin Englund, who also fought in the UFC, you know, we quickly became good friends. So I surrounded myself with people who were also of the caliber that could make it, whether we knew it or not. And I think that led a lot to me making it more than a hobby.
Yeah. When did the thoughts creep in, like, maybe I could get to the UFC?
Well,
when does it become this thing? When does it become? Because now,
maybe you're
a fighter. Now you're a fighter.
Yeah, maybe when I was like my third pro fight, maybe. that I really believe in. I had people telling me that I could make it to the UFC when I was an amateur fighter, but I was like, I don't see it. Or I was like, that's so far away. So many things could happen. You know, like I could get injured. I could, so many things could happen. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to keep fighting. But I think maybe after my third pro fight, I got booked for a pro title fight for a promotion in Michigan that was pretty big at the time. And I was like, okay, I was just kind of looking around. I was like, there's not many guys getting booked for pro titles at 3-0 for legit promotion. So I was like, it's a good sign. And, you know, up to that point, I pretty much dominated everyone I fought on the regional scene. I was like, okay, I can make it. And I had signed with Iridium as a sports agency, who I knew was one of the bigger agencies in the world, especially for fighting. And I was just doing things that I felt like were going to lead me down that path and that I could make it. And I knew, I've always felt like I've never been the most talented person ever. You know, I'm glad I'm not. If I'm the most talented person in the room, I got to find a different room. And, but I always feel like I'm the hardest worker. So I always felt like, you know, I can catch people, you know, if people are better than me, I can catch them. And I started being around guys that were in the UFC, even at my gym in Michigan. I remember Michelle Pereira came in, and this was right before he made his debut, and we would spar and go hard every day. And it was close, man. It was close rounds, and he probably got the better of me, but it was close enough that I was like, okay, this guy is about to make it to the big show, and I'm right there with him. And I've only been fighting for 2 years at the time. I was like, I can make it. So I think maybe that was the turning point where I was like, okay, I can get there.
Why are you always the hardest worker in the room?
I think because I'm realistic with myself, and I know I'm not the most talented. So I'm like, if I don't work hard and I'm not the most talented, then that's going to lead to a lot of ass whoopings, and I hate losing. So I'm like, okay, we're not the most talented, so we just got to bust it. We got to try to catch people where they're slacking, you know? And
yeah,
you know, sometimes that's hard to do because like at Factory X, we got so many talented people that work extremely hard. So it's hard to catch those guys. But that's not regular, you know. A lot of times I feel like talent can rest on its laurels, and that's, or you know, you can catch people that way.
Right. Where did you meet Amanda? How does that happen?
So
just tell me that story.
So I was working at a college, Olivet College, Division III school. I was coaching wrestling there, and
that's in Michigan.
Yeah, it was in
Michigan. That's what brought you to Michigan was a
that's what brought job. Me to Michigan. And so I would go.
Did you know anybody up there? Or you just applying to be a college wrestling coach?
And I was dating. I had a girlfriend at the time.
Here we go.
Yeah. So I come up there, I had a girlfriend at the time, and I would go to the gym. It was SFS was the name of the MMA gym. I would go there in the mornings, and there was no one in there in the mornings. They only had night classes. So I would like just hit a heavy bag. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like, I'm just going to get a workout. And then
that
I would
sounds
go.
Like, hey. That sounds like me. I go in when there's no classes and hit a heavy bag. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe someday I could be in the UFC.
Okay. That's pretty much what was going on. I was like, I'm going to just hit this heavy bag, get a workout in. And Bobby was in there doing private lessons every day in the morning.
You call her Bobby?
I call her Bobby, yeah.
Does so everybody was, call her Bobby?
All her close people. So you call her Bobby. You can call
if
her
I
Bobby.
Called her Bobby, she'd immediately be like, we're friends.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's how like, I always
she,
know.
She would know,
I
know I'm in
if someone
this.
Someone comes up to me and they're like, me and Amanda are good friends. I'm like, probably not.
You don't call her Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby.
All right, well, now it's out there into the world of YouTube. So
yeah, now they know.
Spoil that part. Go ahead. All right. So she's doing what in this gym?
She would do like private lessons for people in the morning. Okay. She was in the UFC at the time. I didn't know who she was, and I remember I'd probably gone there for like a week or two, and she was there every morning. And I would go from there to wrestling practice where I coach, and then I'd drive back and do night classes. So I was like just traveling kind of back and forth. But 2 weeks in, she came up to me. She's like, you know, you don't really know what you're doing, and I'll help you, because she had seen that I was like a talented wrestler. And maybe, I don't know, she invested in me super early. She would always tell us, like, I'm going to help you, but you're going to owe me 2% of whatever you make in the future. I always laugh with her now. I'm like, I'll give you 100%.
Yeah, exactly. And all the closet space.
Right. Yeah. But I didn't know who she was. And I was like, my wife is like, she's king shit talker. She was like, she's brutal with the trash talk. So, she was just roasting me. And I'm like, who is this little girl that's talking trash to me? And then I looked her up. I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. This girl knows way more than me.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I just kind of shut up and was super thankful that I had someone trying to help me. And, she was my coach for a long time, and we became really, really close. And, me and the girlfriend didn't work out, obviously. And,
right.
You know, me and her started dating and got married.
So she was your coach, like established coach and kind of trainer in the gym before you started dating.
Before we started dating, yeah.
How does that then go?
Because
now she's not your coach.
Yeah. Well, she definitely would drop hints. And for me, bro, I was like, this girl is way out of my league. There's no way, you know, if I'm being honest, but she pretty much let me know what the deal was. And I was like, well, I'm not going to miss this opportunity.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of, then we started dating. And then, from there, it was pretty quick. Honestly, we dated for a little over a year, got engaged, and then got married.
3 anniversary recently.
Three years married. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like in the whole thing right now. You got it's Cody Brundage season. You had your anniversary, then you win a fight.
Now I'm with Dustin.
Now you're out with the boys.
Yeah. So I told her, I said, it's funny. Like, I feel like we chill for 4 months and then we have a month and a half of craziness. Chill for 4 months, month and a half of craziness. So
how do you find it to be a pro fighter? I'm glad you touched on this. I still can't wrap my head around what you guys do all day. not because it's not hard work, because it's like, if you fight 3 times a year, that's an active year. Right. Even if you fight 2 times a year, it's a pretty active year by most fighter standards. Mm-hmm. You can't work out 10 hours a day. You'd kill yourself.
Right.
So what's it? What is the ebb and flow like of the life of a pro fighter now that you're living it?
So before this fight, I've worked construction pretty much my whole MMA career as well. Uh-huh. And I don't necessarily do that because I have to. But like you said, I think I might go crazy if I didn't have something.
You got to fill your time with stuff.
Yeah. And so, and also I feel like it gives you kind of an out. Like if I have a terrible day at practice and all I'm doing is fighting, I'm like, I suck. But if I have a bad day at practice and I go crush it at work, I'm like, okay, well, I'm good at something, you know? So, I feel like that's good. I am actually going to, I feel like with that win, you know, hopefully we can renegotiate, get a new deal and a little bit more money, that kind of stuff. And, I can quit that job and just have a little bit more time at home with my daughter and wife, which would be good. Before, you know, I just recently my daughter's been making a lot of improvements and doing a lot of cool stuff. So I've been missing some of those milestones, which has been not easy for me. So, you know, obviously winning allows you to take more time off. So
yeah,
thankful for that. But yeah, I feel like I agree. You know, you can't train 10 hours a day. So you got to find stuff to fill your time. And, I don't know. I feel like I've been able
sometimes
to do
sometimes even hobbies don't do it. Cause I feel like if you played golf all day or whatever, it's like now mine is connected to my work. Like this is separate. My podcast is separate. And then like I have a week off. So I'm like making YouTube videos about the US, you know, what am I doing? Can't I just sit still for a little while? But,
So I'm actually trying to get into like what you do, like, commentating those kind of things. I feel
Yeah,
because I love the sport. Like I said, I love coaching. I love being around the sport. I love the analyst side of things. And so we have some local shows in Colorado that I go be a part of, which is fun and relaxing. And it's nice to go to fights and not have to fight, you know. So
do you find that has it benefited the way that you – your perspective on your own career?
Yeah, I think so. I think I feel like I feel like I give – my analysis comes from like a fighter's perspective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like sometimes that can change the way you analyze fights, which I think is good. Like when I see like you or Anik in there with the fighter, the ebb and flow between you and them is different than the ebb and flow between two fighters commentating. And so of when course, I do commentary, I'm with my buddy Jordan Kurtz, who he's a guy at our gym. He trains jiu-jitsu, but he doesn't fight. He's just big into the media side of things. And we have a good ebb and flow between us because I kind of bring the fighter perspective and he brings the analyst / like fan perspective, which I think is a good thing for viewers.
Do you step outside of the fighter's realm of it? And like if you're working a show, like something that I learned a lot in the fight game compared to other sports is like the whole business of it. And it doesn't come all at once. But like, I remember, like, I hear fighters when they're like, yeah, man, I was on the regional scene. Like, I'd sell a lot of tickets and blah. And I'm just like, oh, yeah. The promoters. And then other people would say, I couldn't get a fight. And it's like, because they wouldn't sell a lot of tickets, but they did. Right? You don't want the guy who can't sell any tickets, but then
beating the guy who sells all your tickets.
Yeah, that's not how it works. And so then I'm just like, oh, that's kind of how the UFC works on just a way bigger scale. You don't want a guy who can't sell to go into Madison Square Garden and beat the guy who you're building the pay-per-view around.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And like, so now if you're in the business side of MMA, then I think, you know, it opens your mind to like seeing your own career. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like how big branding is. And like, you're absolutely right. I never thought about it like that. Like on the regional scene, you've seen it. People see it all the time. Like, oh, you don't sell tickets, you're not going to get priority fights.
Right.
And if you do get fights, typically they're going to try to match you up to get fed to somebody. And you're right, on the bigger scale, no one wants to, like, the UFC as a business doesn't want to see their biggest attractions lose to people that aren't necessarily pulling anyone in.
Exactly. You know? So, it's like, it's kind of the underside of the fight game, but there's a reason why they call it a promotion and not a league.
Yeah, that's the truth for sure. Like, I do feel like people forget that a lot, that it is a business and it's a money making business. It's not just an entertainment business.
Right.
And that's so, like, when I see fans get super upset about certain things, I'm like, they just don't understand, you know, and it's hard to be mad at them, but they don't understand that for the business to survive, these kind of things have to happen. And whether you like it or not, that's just the fight game.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Fitz Nation podcast in audio form. If you like the full uncut interview, you can head to Podcast Central at UFC Fight Pass. There's a bunch of different MMA podcasts there, and I am so proud to be one of them, and that Fitz Nation is on the UFC Fight Pass roster. So if you want more from this interview, you can head to UFC Fight Pass. You can also, of course, head back through the archives. So many of these interviews are evergreen. Great looks at the lives and careers of these fighters we love to watch in the octagon. Get to know them on a whole different level through this podcast, one episode at a time. Special thanks again to Manscaped. Head to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Use the promo code FITS20. And of course, you can always track me down on social media. I am at Brendan Fitz TV on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I thank you again for listening, and I will talk to you next time on Fitz Nation.